Hi, welcome to Whiskey Cast, the Cask Strength podcast featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 80 for February 25th, 2007. Coming up in a few minutes.
You have number four.
I have number four, and ooh, that's good. Okay, Pat was talking earlier about getting your tongue dancing. I get a little bit of that. It's not fiery, but it's nice and well-balanced. It's really good.
If you've ever wanted to know just what goes into picking a barrel of whiskey for a single barrel bottling, keep listening. First, though, let's look at the news. Last time around, I focused on expansion in the whiskey business, with plans for new construction at distilleries in both Scotland and Kentucky. And there's even more to report this week. Thursday, the Kentucky Economic Development Finance Authority approved a package of incentives for Heaven Hill Distilleries. The incentive package will help fund expansion at Heaven Hill's Bernheim Distillery in Louisville. History buffs may recall that Heaven Hill moved its distilling operations to Bernheim after the 1996 fire that destroyed the Heaven Hill Distillery near Bardstown. Heaven Hill's Larry Cass says it's a sign of confidence in the future of whiskey sales.
We are going to be expanding the existing operation that we have been producing all of our American whiskeys and bourbons at Bernheim, and we are going to be expanding the operation that we have there. We're going to be installing a new milling system there. We're going to be putting in another mash cooker. We're going to be putting in four new fermenters, and we're going to be restoring a boiler there, essentially. So, and it's going to, what it's going to result in an increase of capacity by about 40%, essentially.
And I understand you're also going to create some new jobs.
Yes, it's going to. An increase of about 15 new jobs. We currently have about 34 people that work at the Bernheim Distillery, and it's going to result in the creation of about 15 new jobs with a payroll about $450,000.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, we're very excited about it. And you know, I mean, obviously, this is it's a great sign both for the bourbon American whiskey category. There's a lot of demand and also for our brands, for Evan Williams, Elijah Craig, Old Fitzgerald, for our rye brands, Rittenhouse Rye, for the Bernheim wheat whiskey. In the whiskey businesses, you know, we always got to be projecting ahead of the curve here, and so we just need more capacity, and that's what we're doing. We're just planning for the future, and it's all good signs. So.
Heaven Hill is privately owned and does not release sales figures, but Larry says that 40% increase in capacity is a pretty good way to figure how they expect sales to grow. White & Mackay has signed a new deal. No, not that one. But this one means more of the company's whiskeys will be available in the United States. The distiller has signed a distribution deal with Gemini Spirits and Wine for Isle of Jura and Fettercairn single malts, as well as the flagship White & Mackay expressions, the Claymore & McKinley blends, and the Glava Scotch Whiskey Liqueur. Until recently, Gemini Spirits and Wine was known as the Monsieur Henri division of the Sazerac Company, which also owns Buffalo Trace Distillery in Kentucky. White & Mackay's Dalmore single malt will continue to be distributed by Beam Global Spirits and Wine. And, by the way, White & Mackay executives say there's nothing to read from this into the future of the VJ Malia talks. Tickets are now on sale for Malt Advocates Whiskey Fest in Chicago on April 13th. And even though it's on a Friday the 13th, Malt Advocate publisher John Hansel says it'll be a lucky night in Chicago.
You know, some of the smaller distilleries, I think, are stepping up to the plate and bringing out some really special, rare things, too. So in addition to the whiskeys from the bigger guys, it should be a great event. We have some speakers, too, that are I'm looking forward to some new ones, like Noel Sweeney from Cooley is coming for the first time. And, you know, so we have some classics, you know, some people that are coming, like, you know, Richard Patterson-type guys who are like, you know, if you haven't seen them yet, you got to see them. And some new people. Like Noel, so it should be a great event.
There are usually a series of whiskey events in Chicago leading up to Whiskey Fest. As I get details, I'll keep you posted. There's another whiskey event that I'd like to draw your attention to, especially if you're in the Philadelphia area or on the U.S. East Coast. Saturday, April 21st, there'll be a charity tasting with Burn Stewart master distiller Ian McMillan at Dad's in Lumberton, New Jersey. It's just a few miles up the road from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield. Ticket sales will benefit the American Cancer Society Relay for Life program. Door prizes include two tickets to Whiskey Fest New York this October and a membership in the Scotch Malt Whiskey Society's U.S. chapter. Everything you'll need to know to buy tickets is on the WhiskeyCast website. It's www.whiskeycast.com. I plan to be there, and I hope you can join me. The other night, I attended a tasting of Signatory Single Malts with John Hansel at Monk's Cafe in Philadelphia. One of the other tasters on hand that night was Pat McCarthy of Bayway's World of Liquors in Elizabeth, New Jersey. Pat was featured in episode 58 last September when I talked about store-exclusive bottlings, and he invited me to sit in as he and the Bayway tasting panel selected their next single-barrel bottling of Eagle Rare Bourbon for the store. A couple of nights later, I was in the basement at Bayway's with Pat, Paul Mildowney, David Greenfield, and a table full of sample bottles from Buffalo Trace Distillery. With just a couple of minor edits, here's how the tasting session went.
So we've got what here, Pat?
These are nine different samples of Eagle Rare barrels. They probably will range in age from about 13 to 14 years. That's normally what they'll send us. If we find two that are exceptional, we've gotten two barrels at once in the past. I believe we were probably the only store in the country that had one barrel bottled as a half gallon. But we shall see what they sent us here.
And now what you normally try to do with this is pick something that's not one of the usual bottlings, right?
Right. And this will go into the bottle that's marked 10 years old, the standard Eagle Rare bottle. On it, it will be labeled, selected, and bottled exclusively for Bayway Liquors. It'll have the age on it, the barrel number. They're pretty good now with the labeling it so that you know what you're buying.
But as opposed to the distillery bottlings where they bottle a 10-year-old and then the 17-year-old single barrel, right?
Exactly,
so
yes.
This is somewhere in between these.
Yes, yeah. In a lot of cases, it drinks every bit as good as the 17-year-old for about half the price, which they probably don't want me to say, but...
we can edit this, right? I mean, yeah. We can take out what...
And what we'll do, we'll line them up and then look at the colors. Smell, and then drink.
Maybe we do three at a time?
Probably the best bet.
Don't have four glasses.
So why don't we... Are you going to join us?
I'll nose, but okay. I got to drive, so. Okay. So do I. Never stop.
I got to go to Staten Island, man.
Yeah, but I'm driving all the way to South Jersey.
You got numbers of these 1 through 9, Pat?
Actually, they're all numbered... they put the barrel numbers on real nice. Starts at 34, and it's almost numerical.
Barrel 32?
Yeah. Right now we're going to do 32, 34, and 35, and 37. Why not? We'll do four to start.
We'll do four?
They're all right now barrel proof 125.
So yeah, 62.5%.
Yes, and they'll cut that to, you know, the standard proof Eagle Rare, I believe it's 90.
90.
Yeah. So far, they all look pretty equal in color. It's funny, sometimes you'll have one that'll just jump out. You know, the color, it'll look like, you know, this. It's so big and bold. And then, unfortunately, the taste won't match.
Yeah.
Kind of like the other night at the tasting.
Thing. Yeah.
No, not really. Actually, I was just looking for legs at that point.
All right.
These three seem to stick with the legs. They're still hanging.
Okay, so what I'm going to do is pull four this way.
Smell it.
Pat's got these four.
They all seem pretty equal. This one may be a touch darker, number four.
A little bit richer, color-wise.
Nine choices is a bit much. And I guess what we'll probably do is do these later tomorrow. You know,
Did you get an impression off the nose right off the bat?
I did on number four.
Right.
I like four best. Are you?
I didn't get much difference.
Which order are you in?
That's same order.
Okay.
So,
right.
Yeah.
Number four is the one that looked the darkest.
Yes. Yeah. And not a whole lot, though. I mean, it's...
Although number three has a bit more of an alluring nose, I think.
Coconut.
A little vanilla. Coconut? I don't think coconut.
Yeah,
but
you know Willie Tate from Isle of Jura?
Yeah.
He was in one day for... and we can't do tastings in the store, but he was going to talk to anybody that came in about scotch. But it was a miserable rainy day. There wasn't a customer in the store. And you could see he was upset. So we brought him downstairs, and we started drinking these. But it was everything had coconut.
Yeah,
it was all coconut.
Everything. Oh, yeah, it was coconut.
So I got a lot of alcohol on one and two in the nose.
One I definitely did, yeah.
Two might not have been as much, but it's still a little too much, I think. Now, can I take a sniff of one of these?
Certainly.
Okay. Okay, this is number one, right?
Yes.
Okay. I'm getting the vanilla and the oak. Okay, that's number one. You're right, I don't see much difference in the color on these other than that number four. A little darker.
And a lot of it's subjective to the
lighting
in the glass.
And the lighting, because as you move away from these lights, this is doing nothing.
Getting something good off number two, but I'm not sure what it is. I can't quite place it. Number three seems a little drier to me. It's not quite. I don't get as quite a nose as I do out of the first two. And number four. Ooh, that is a little. Yeah, that is looking under the same lighting.
It's not horribly darker, but
yeah. Ooh, yeah. I get a nice oak on that one.
Yes,
nice vanilla.
Number one seemed to be a hotter nose on it.
This
more
just seems.
Alcohol, so this
just seems more balanced.
How does it taste first?
I made my pitch.
And that sound is not Pat falling down. That sound is that's the conveyor belts upstairs. Number one is very hot.
Yeah, harsh. I mean, it's... Number one gives me nothing of what I want in a bourbon, for me.
I mean, even if you put an ice cube in it, it probably wouldn't do any justice.
15 coronas.
Very, very hot. In the mouth, it's all right, but the finish is just...
You gotta repeat that. Say it once, and then you repeat it again. Hold on.
Do you remember the other night how some of them your tongue would start dancing?
Oh, yeah.
this doesn't do it. Yeah, you know, your tongue just sits there, and it's...
Reminds me of those, sounds like those last four we were trying the other night. What'd you have the other night?
Signatory scotches, all cast strength. John Hansel did a tasting down in Philadelphia.
Okay. All single malts, some experiments, and some couple of low end stills and a bunch of silent stills.
Okay.
Do you remember where he said about the people that are hoarding the Springbank 21-year-old?
Yeah.
Last night I went to a fellow's house over in Hoboken, and he had invited people over who are whiskey geeks. The first bottle I see on the table is a Springbank 21-year-old. So I retell the story, and Hansel had said that people, you know, they bought this years ago when it first came out. It was relatively cheap, but they bought cases of it. The guy goes, I only have 6 bottles left. But the table was, I mean, it was a very interesting table, to say the least.
So what's the verdict on number one? Too hot?
Just not much going on in it. If it was a standard bottle you picked up off the shelf, fine. You know, you're not going to be disappointed. It's a nice bottle of Eagle Rare. What we look for is something a little bit more unique. And the customers now look for it also. They will hold off buying the bottle if they know we have a barrel coming, you know, soon.
And number one, to get you through tonight, nothing more than that.
So now we're on number two.
There's not much difference nose-wise, one to two.
No. A little bit more in the mouth.
Yeah.
The mouth is a little bit more open now.
Number two is a little more silky. Actually, the nose, I got a little more caramel on number three. In the nose. Much more appealing than the first two.
I'm in the basement, Joe.
What do we have close to the Glenlivet 15-year-old French Oak?
It's a whiskey.
I was going to say the Balvenie 17, but we're out of it.
They went close to the Glenlivet finish?
Yeah.
Glenmorangie, maybe the 12.
You don't have any Glenlivet, Joe, or they want to try something different?
Something different as close to like Glenlivet 15-year-old.
Oh. I'll be right up.
We have to work at the same time.
They'll wait.
Not enough taste.
That's really the big sin in one of these is to be bland.
Almost. Yeah, well, that's what I find in it. The nose was nice.
No, nose was very nice.
Very
nice. It doesn't match the mouth.
No, I expected a lot more out of number three. You have number four.
I have number four, and ooh, that's good. Okay. Pat was talking earlier about getting your tongue dancing. I get a little bit of that. It's not fiery, but it's nice and well balanced. That's really good.
You could drink it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It would make you happy.
It would make me very happy. Now, let me Yeah, let me try it with just a cap full of water.
You want to open it up a little?
Yeah, let's see how it goes with the... Okay. So with just a cap full of water...
A little sugar helps the medicine go.
Yeah, that's it. No, it's actually very nice. Very well-rounded.
Yeah. I get, yeah, the more, little bit more of the floral notes in that.
Yeah.
It tends to open up really nicely with some water.
Except I have a feeling most of the people who buy the whiskey here, when they drink it, they're drinking it straight. Maybe a drop of water. Maybe a drop of water.
Well, more often than that, they don't understand the purpose. They think you can put water in to cut it.
Right.
They don't realize that it's to release the flavors and the aromas and everything, that little drop of water. That's just part of the Bay Way experience. Yeah, there's a whole experience. That's,
in reality, there's nothing wrong with putting a few drops of water in there just to open things up and release more of the sense, because you get rid of that fieriness. It puts out the fire a little bit and you get more of the taste.
Well, like any of the cask strength Scotch whiskeys. It just, you know, everybody goes, let's throw some rocks on it.
No.
You're just killing it.
No,
you just throw a couple of drops of water in, and it's like, oh, all of a sudden the room lights up, and you're going, oh, that's nice. And then you taste it, and it's even better. But the key is to show them the difference, to taste it without the water.
And then they drop.
And then the drop into the water.
A drop or two, as you did it, out of the cap. Not
oops, I got too much in there.
Yeah.
And it just is two different worlds. I mean, the first one is probably pretty good. The second one just goes like, oh, that's nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it goes down a lot smoother with just a little bit of water. And I think if more people actually tried it with a few drops of water, you'd get more bourbon drinkers. Because they try it straight and it's too harsh, too fiery, and too nasty for some people.
They're not ready.
But, yeah,
they don't know what to expect, and it's whiskey. Yeah, it's not...
I'm getting some nice corn out of this one, too, as well.
I tell you, number four doesn't need any water.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's very smooth. It
right.
just flows down. There's no burn. There's nothing. Which sometimes is, and becomes a little like
Sherry.
It's too easy to drink. you sit there, and before you know it, you and your buddies or whomever, mm-hmm. and you say, where'd the bottle go?
So it sounds, without Pat's verdict, you're like number four is the pick.
Well,
of these four.
Of these four, yeah.
And then you got to try these other five later. And
but as Pat said, it to do nine different bourbons,
in one setting.
The palate's got to get shot. I mean, we find like with wine, some people can do 100 wines in an evening, but I don't know how they do it.
Yeah. I mean, I think... My record, I've nosed maybe 15 different whiskeys in an evening, but by the end of the night, you couldn't tell the difference.
No. And you can tell all of these are related because we know they're all from the same place, but you can tell they're all related in some fashion, but it's just the difference of the blend, et cetera.
We also want to give them all a fair chance.
Right.
And by number nine here, we may be so, it may turn out to be the best, but.
But now, the thing I'm looking at here is we've got these four bottles that we've tried, all out of the same still, all made the same, aged in relatively similar barrels under relatively similar conditions. But we see a vast difference between these four glasses. Why are we seeing this?
Location.
On my way.
Just like real estate, location. Where it is in the house, the way the humidity, and it's they can tell where it is here. If you notice, each one has a location, a barrel location, L443. I want 344. They may be different barrel houses, different locations on the barrel racks. It all comes into play. It's... dramatically so sometimes. It's
now, in the standard distillery bottling, these would all be blended together.
No,
for the most part.
No, Eagle Rare is still a single barrel.
Even in the test?
Yes, yeah. Anything they barrel is a single barrel.
Okay.
When you come to The Elmer T. Lee, for example. Elmer T. would be put together. We then take the single barrel of it. Right? Wait a minute.
No, that's right.
It is. Yeah, Elmer T. is
Elmer
put
T.
together.
Elmer T. could blend 100 different barrels. Right. If they, obviously, it wouldn't be cost effective.
Yeah.
But
kind of like John said the other night about dumping everything in a sewer and letting it run down. Describing how romantic it is making bottling whiskey.
But in that case, because there's no age statement on the Elmers.
There's none on the regular bottle on the shelf. Ours will have an age statement. And normally, I think all of them now have been 10 years old. The regular one probably runs 7-8 years old.
And when you but when you get Elmer's, Elmer's already selected all these bottles because he's already picked all the barrels for his, right?
Yes.
So you've already gone through the, at least according to him, he's picked all. He's gone through and selected everything that's going out with his name on it, theoretically.
Yes. Yeah. He. What I was told is Elmer comes to the warehouse one day a week, picks his bottles to take home, and picks the barrels, you know, that should be on the Elmer T. Lee line. But it's good. What was the consensus so far?
Gentlemen.
So far,
yeah, I thought the mouth. And what did you think before? I mean, the mouthfeel
on the number four was really good, very well balanced. Mm-hmm. Had just about the right amount of fire, without overpowering it. And then with a couple of drops of water, it opened up really nicely.
Yeah.
That's one of those ones you could sit there and just sort of sip all night.
Right. That's. I mean, there's some whiskeys that. You know, this proof a little bit higher, it just overpowers you with the alcohol. I mean, we're drinking it at 125 proof now. It's just good. It's so good, the Eagle Rare, that you can drink it that way, and it's not dominated by the alcohol.
Unlike, for instance, other bourbons.
Other bourbons that we,
some of these other examples that are in the cast.
Yeah, there's some on the shelf now that you look at, and they'll be 125 proof. When you drink it, it's hot. I mean, it's just hot. This has character to it. It's, you're not being overpowered by alcohol on it.
So for a cask strength bourbon, that's actually really rare to have it at that level and have that level of complexity.
Right.
And that level of flavor underneath the alcohol.
Mm-hmm. And then when they cut it down, it just it opens it up, you know, that much more. I'm sure you've had the George Stagg.
Once or twice.
Okay. But that's another one where you don't taste the alcohol. It'll run 138 proof sometimes. There's no alcohol to it. You know, it's just...
And you don't feel it until the fourth glass.
Or the next one.
Yeah. I mean, Buffalo Trace does a great job. They all their whiskeys, you know, are really good. And... And that's why we're behind it. It's I just wish they'd give me Buffalo Trace.
Not
in New Jersey. Yeah, they're not ready yet. They don't have enough whiskey. They don't want to. I politic with them every time I see them.
Now, what happens next? I'm assuming you'll go through these other five in the next couple of days or so. And then what happens after this?
We'll select the... And we'll vote on, you know, which one will finally arrive at a conclusion. And then just call them. Tell them to bottle it.
And it'll be here in a few weeks.
It takes long. It takes,
probably 2 months.
Yeah, but because they have to set the bottling line up for that. They have to pull that barrel out. The shipping, because the distributor is involved in all now, too. The truck's got to go down and pick it up. That's why we... You know, we tried to figure it out so that we're finished with the one barrel and we have the other one either in already or, you know, coming in a short period. So that it's almost always something that we selected on the shelf. With this, with the Elmer T, Jack Daniel's single barrel is another one that we, last time we picked three barrels at once. I told him about, you know, Jimmy Bedford, you know, if we can get him up here, you know, I'll give you a call on that. Yeah. And they're working on it.
Okay.
They're sending the samples up. And I told him, if he's flying somewhere,
It's got to come through Newark.
We pick them up at the airport. We bring them here. You know, we taste them. We go out for dinner. We bring them back to the airport. It's on its way, which is what happened the last time.
And actually, we did a bottle, a barrel of Blanton's as well. And Blanton's is the is up there price wise in the Jack single barrel category.
And it's really from the same distillery in the same place as Buffalo Trace, as these as what we're tasting right now.
Yeah.
But at twice the price, and it was we were a little bit wary about whether or not it would work, and it worked. It has worked.
Yes.
For $22 bottle and a $40 bottle, it's made a difference. And actually, yeah, and the whiskeys are all good regardless of the price range. Elmer and Eagle are probably the best values dollar for dollar.
That and the Evan Williams.
Right.
The Evan Williams we sell for $20. Definitely number four out of those four. And that would be barrel number 35. That's actually it's
35
the
35 or 37. I wrote it down.
35.
37.
No, 35.
Well,
it's the one that leaked. 37 we didn't do. 34.
Okay.
We did 2, 3, 4, and 5.
The next day, the guys went through the other five cask samples, but in the end, sample number 4 was the winner. As Pat said, it'll take a couple of months for the barrel to be bottled and shipped to Bayway, and when it goes on sale, I'll let you know after I buy a couple of bottles. Thanks again to Pat, Paul, David, and the rest of the guys at Bayway for letting me share this with you. That's all for this episode of Whiskey Cast. My email address for questions and suggestions is comments@whiskeycast.com. Whiskey Cast is a production of MG Media, copyright 2007, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.